What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
And I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. So, we got a two-parter.
A two-parter. Our first two-parter.
We probably should have had a couple of two-parters, but, you know. You live and you learn.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Record and you learn.
Yeah.
I guess.
More for you guys to enjoy.
Yeah. So, we have plans for when we do two-parters in the future of kind of releasing like a Tuesday, Thursday, or like a Wednesday, Friday kind of deal. But this is just going to be a regular Friday, Friday. So, you'll have to wait a whole week.
You'll be on the edge of your seat for part two for a whole week.
Yeah. So, I definitely got this from the... It's a pretty popular show. I don't know if you've ever saw it. Stranger Things?
Oh, that little show.
That little show, you know?
That little show that I've been watching since I was a sophomore in high school and now I'm 24.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
I'm familiar. I love that dang show.
Yeah, that's where I didn't steal it, but, I think it was maybe another podcast that was talking about this, and I was like, wait, that's linked to Stranger Things in a way?
Mm-hmm.
And so, for those of you who don't know, we're going to be talking about the Montauk Project. I don't know what just happened there.
Say it again.
It was like my voice knob just turned off.
I'm very excited because first of all, I love Stranger Things, like I said. I know very little about this.
So there's like a conspiracy.
Yeah. Oh, love. Yeah. This is right up my
alley.
This is right up my alley. Yeah. I love a good conspiracy.
Total conspiracy.
I'm excited now.
Lots of, like, weird kind of, like, Kobe and Archie are down here today, and they're just wrestling all over the floor. It's like they come into the basement for the theme of the podcast, the archives. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so we're saying conspiracy theorist. Obviously, Sam has done great work once again on this episode while I was doing a lot of the listening and watching of like documentaries and stuff on it.
I've done no work. I'm excited to just sit back, relax, and enjoy with you guys.
Well, then I guess we'll just jump right on in. So on the far edge of Long Island stands a rusted radar tower. This place is Camp Hero. Officially, it's a decommissioned military base turned into a state park. But for decades, whispers have spread that this site was home to something else. There's stories of government experiments, missing children, even time travel.
Mm.
And tonight, we will begin with what history has confirmed, and then in episode 2, we will drift into the ominous rumors that the Montauk Project is known for. So before we dive into the rumors, we kind of need to understand why Montauk was chosen in the first place as a military stronghold. Its windswept cliffs rise like natural battlements, offering an unobstructed view over the Atlantic. To military planners during World War II, Montauk Point was a fortress waiting to be built. The U.S. Army moved quickly, and in 1942, Camp Hero was officially commissioned as a coastal defense station. Gigantic concrete gun barriers were carved into the earth, their barrels capable of firing 16-inch shells, each weighing over a ton, far out to sea. Observation towers rose above the trees, scanning for the faintest silhouette of an enemy ship, which we had fighter jets today at work take off. Nobody told me, so I didn't get to watch them. I was at
Nobody
lunch.
Nobody told me.
I was at lunch, and I was like, why does it sound like somebody scraping our building?
Oh, wait a minute. Like, I saw Somebody posted on Facebook. They live, like, close to the airport, near the airport. And they were like, did anybody hear all of that? That's so funny. I guess that's what it was. It was the photo jets.
They're crazy loud.
That's hilarious. That's what that was.
I heard that noise in a cement building in our break room. So I was, like, in the middle of the building. Right. And I still heard it.
Yeah.
And they took off from the runway closest to the airport.
Yeah.
So, like, there's the airport side, and then there's our side.
Right.
Normally, they take off from our runway side, and our whole building shakes when they take off. There was, like, four of them. It was wild. Well, anyway, back diving in. It was a random, you know, the random thoughts. Hidden bunkers, camouflaged to blend with dunes and forests, lay in wait, stocked and silent. Their mission was simple but crucial. Protect New York Harbor from the lurking threat of German U-boats and possible assaults along the East Coast. When the war ended, the guns went quiet. Many of these weapons were dismantled, their usefulness fading into modern warfare evolved. But Camp Hero did not vanish into obscurity. Instead, it adapted. The Cold War was beginning. With it came new anxieties. Not from battleships on the horizon, but from the sky above and the dangerous side of science. Radar had already changed the face of World War II, allowing Allied forces to detect enemy planes and submarines before they struck. But in the 1950s, the U.S. military took radar to a new level with the SAGE system, a vast computerized defense network designed to spot Soviet bombers. So Camp Hero's radar tower became one of the most powerful in the world, a giant steel centennial aimed at the skies. This wasn't just ordinary equipment. It was a symbol of the Cold War's technological race, where every advancement carried both hope and fear.
That is a crazy thought. Like, that's also a thing that they had to, like, be conscious about, like, during the war. Like, things are advancing, like, people are getting, like, you don't even think about it now, because it's just like, oh, that's so normal to us.
Yeah. Like, we weren't, and the military does a lot of stuff that we don't know about. Like, they're definitely on the forefront of things.
For sure.
So, they're developing, there's definitely stuff we have no clue about that they have.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure drones, like, they were a thing.
Yeah.
So, by the early 1980s, Camp Hero's official mission had ended. In 1981, the military closed the base, leaving behind its eerie radar tower and decaying bunkers. A decade later, the land was transferred to New York State, and in 1992, Camp Hero State Park was dedicated. Much of the property was open to the public for hiking and fishing, but not everything was accessible. Certain buildings were sealed with heavy welding, and the underground tunnels were reportedly filled with cement. The iconic radar tower, however, was spared demolition and preserved as a historic landmark. Its skeletal silhouette still dominates the Montauk sky today. The fort that once bristled with steel cannons soon bristled with something stranger. Radar towers, satellite dishes, and communication arrays. The massive SAGE radar tower, still looming today, became the most iconic relic of this transformation. Locals recall the strange hum of its machinery and the eerie rotation of its enormous dish. I miss an ominous dish.
Da-da-da. He's just shamelessly self-promoting.
I was just trying to promote the show, you know. Don't forget to rate and like and comment.
Do all the things. Tell a friend and tell a friend.
Yeah. From this point forward, Montauk's purpose shifted from defending the coast with firepower to exploring new frontiers of surveillance, control, and possibly even science that exceeded what the public was meant to know. Just an hour west of Montauk sits Brookhaven National Laboratory, one of America's premier research facilities. Since 1947, Brookhaven has been at the cutting edge of nuclear energy, particle physics, and advanced technology. Its massive particle accelerator, pioneering nuclear experiments, and high energy research gave Long Island an aura of scientific power during the Cold War. For conspiracy theorists, this proximity added fuel to the Montauk fire. If Brookhaven was unlocking the secrets of the atom, why couldn't Montauk be testing the boundaries of the mind, or even time itself?
I mean, they make a compelling point. Why not?
Huh? There's a lot of things where you go,
yeah.
Maybe. According to one scientist, Preston Nichols, his colleagues from Brookhaven needed a place for experiments that could be conducted in complete seclusion. They required specific technology and personnel from the military. At the top of their list, the old SAGE radar at Montauk, which ran at 420 to 450 megahertz. Preston claimed these frequencies were considered window frequencies, capable of entering the human consciousness. The radar was technically obsolete, making it perfect for experimentation without raising alarms. A high-powered device that could focus massive amounts of microwave energy without threatening national security. The military provided Air Force radar technicians who had worked on the SAGE system during the 1960s, and they observed a strange phenomenon. By altering the pulse rate and the pulse width of the radar, they could subtly change the mood of the base itself. Soldiers felt calmer or anxious depending on the signal. Even this small observation thrilled the project supervisors because they realized that they could influence thoughts and emotions remotely.
That's insane. And you want to know what it kind of reminds me of a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that the conspiracy? Well, it's actually not a conspiracy theory. I'm pretty sure it's been confirmed that Disney like pumps out smells in their parks to like make you like smells of like food and stuff. Yeah. To me, like, it is crazy. Like, it's just how humans are, like, wired. They're, like, it's wild. Like, well, even back then, like...
You know that you can use, like, these megahertz, like, these frequencies and stuff, and, like, knock things down.
Yeah. It's wild.
Like, they've figured out that, like, bridges, if you vibrate at the right frequency, will fall down. The Mythbusters, I think, did it.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, soldiers marching and stuff. And they kind of, like, you know, time that frequency or whatever it was.
It's wild.
It is absolutely crazy, which is why this stuff kind of freaks people out, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we get into, like, the actual, like, what...
Yeah. I'm literally, I'm blind here. I've got no idea.
The picture we have, you know, is just the satellite.
Yeah.
They're just that dish, and it looks like a little concrete building.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole lot more than that. So this led to what is known as... the microwave oven experiments.
Don't like the sound of that.
No. The radar reflector was rotated and angled toward a shielded room inside the base. Inside that room, test subjects sat in a special chair while being bathed in powerful microwave and radio waves. Early experiments could induce laughter, tears, anger, and sleepiness. The general mood of the entire base seemed to follow the radar's output.
Insane.
Yeah, you know about to the... We'll probably cover it in depth at one point, but the Russian experiment?
Mm-hmm.
The whole... They kept them inside and pumped, like, certain oxygen and stuff. And, yeah, that's a wild story. Next came direct mind control. By turning the radar's pulse and amplitude... to biological rhythms, researchers could allegedly influence what a person thought, and even what they did. The prime test subject was Duncan Cameron, who endured repeated exposure. Some of these sessions delivered devastating effects. Continuous exposure to 100 kilowatts of RF power reportedly caused severe brain and tissue damage.
Well, yeah.
As zones of heat formed wherever the microwave beams concentrated inside his body.
Hmm.
Hence the microwave.
Hmm.
To mitigate the risk, the scientists discovered they could reverse the radar antenna 180 degrees, the burning side pointed into the sky, while the non-burning side transmitted waves capable of altering thoughts and moods without physically harming the subjects.
How nice.
Yeah, what happens if, like, a helicopter or something like that drove, like, it just all of a sudden, like, hit the right spot and was just hovering right there.
Oh, my God.
Insane. They developed the Montauk chair around 1974, and it was a psychic amplification device connected to a Cray 1 and IBM 360 computer, which we will go more into during part 2 of the episode. Physically active individuals like Cameron could attempt to transmit their thoughts across Long Island and perhaps even beyond. The Montauk Project at this stage operated largely outside of government oversight, funded privately.
By who?
We're going to find out.
And in what the heck?
And in defiance of congressional objections. Some whispers even tie the funding to the remnants of Nazi gold. Regardless of the origin of the funds, the radar and its experiments marked a radical shift from a Cold War early warning system to a tool capable of controlling consciousness itself. And so, the Montauk Radar Tower, silent and looming today, was a window into the human mind, or a doorway into something far stranger. So, starting to get the,
to get the idea here.
Starting to see where the whole Stranger Things Montauk kind of...
The crossover here.
Preston Nichols was born in Long Island, New York, in 1946. From an early age, he showed an aptitude for both science and the mind, eventually earning degrees in parapsychology, psychology, and electrical engineering. After graduation, he entered the field of defense electronics, working at Brookhaven National Laboratory and Advanced Ideas Laboratory, AIL. A hub for classified research. His involvement with the Montauk began in 1968 at the tail end of the stealth research conducted at AIL. Preston was told that these projects had roots going back to the Philadelphia experiment of 1943. You know what the Philadelphia experiment is?
No.
So, the Philadelphia experiment was... There was a ship in, I believe it was the Philly Navy Yard, and we might cover this in, like, the next episode, but pretty much the military made that ship disappear and then reappear in Norfolk, Virginia, and as fast as it appeared in Norfolk, Virginia, it appeared back in Philadelphia. But some, like, soldiers and stuff like that were on the ship... started to, like, go crazy. Some, when they came back, were morphed into the ship, like, halfway. Their bodies were, like, halfway, like, dangling from one floor into another.
Nope.
Some of their faces were just stuck into the ship.
Okay.
There's a movie about it. That you can go into your own. That could be a whole nother episode on that stuff and how wild it is. He even had the opportunity... to review the final report of Project Rainbow, which documented the original experiment. The report identified the Cameron brothers as Navy liaisons, a detail that would become pivotal in connecting the Philadelphia experiment to the later Montauk operations. At Montauk, Preston was recruited into a top-secret mind sciences project. He worked on interfacing human consciousness with computers, including the development of the Montauk chair, a device designed to amplify psychic abilities. Using subtle quantum fields, the chair could read a person's thoughts as they entered a trance-like state. Coils collected the psychic emanations, while a bank of radio receivers, conceptually inspired by Nikola Tesla.
Interesting.
Digitized these signals, effectively converting thought into computable data. According to Preston, the radar tower at Camp Hero could then turn these thoughts into tangible effects. Preston also played a central role in the Montauk Boys program training children as PSI warriors. These young recruits were allegedly part of experimental time vortex trials, and some were lost during the initial testing.
What do you mean lost?
Lost in time.
Like, what do you mean just lost? Like, you just lost
them? They sent them in time, and then they couldn't get them back.
Like, where do they go?
I don't know. Some could be with the dinosaurs, some could be...
Have you ever seen Halloween Town?
Yeah.
You know the scene where they're traveling back in time? Literally back into, like, the present? Mm-hmm. Every time I think of time travel, that is the scene that I see. Yeah. Like, that is how I see time travel.
That's
like,
probably how it happens.
Going through the times. That's insane, though. Like, what do you mean? Just missing?
They're just missing.
We lost them. Not missing. Yeah. Lost.
They were considered the Montauk Boys.
Wow.
While the scope of these activities remains unclear, his technical background and hands-on involvement make him a key figure in understanding the operational and experimental side of Montauk.
Well, yeah.
Al Bielek was born in 1927 and demonstrated extraordinary intelligence from infancy. His earliest memories, at just 9 months old, include full comprehension of conversations during a family Christmas party. As a child, he became known as the Walking Encyclopedia, excelling in electronics and science. By high school, he had already passed advanced electronics tests, drawing the attention of the U.S. Navy during the war years.
That's crazy.
Al went on to complete formal education in electronics and worked for various military contractors. Through these roles, he became aware of the U.S. involvement in experimental programs related to extraterrestrials and PSI operations, psychic operations. Strange experiences soon followed, including a reported encounter in Hawaii in 1956 with an individual he believes was actor Mark Hamill from Star Wars. Shortly thereafter, he was recruited into the Montauk Project. While working at Montauk, Al was recruited, not Mark.
Just to be clear.
Yeah. While working at Montauk, Al commuted from his home in California, supposedly using a time tunnel to be teleported to the underground base. By the 1970s, he had become the program director for the psychics operating the Montauk chair and oversaw aspects of the Montauk Boys program, including training PSI operatives. He maintained regular contact with Preston Nichols and Duncan Cameron, another prime participant in the experiments. Al claimed to have participated in time travel experiments, including missions to Mars, ancient Earth, like 100,000 BC, and even to the year 6037 AD.
I love that you said, like, 100,000 BC. That was funny.
Yeah. Well, he's talking about, like, going way back. No, and way like, you forward. Know. 6037?
Yeah, that's... What do you mean? That's not a real year.
He remembers collecting canisters of light and dark energy during these missions. By January 1988, after seeing the film The Philadelphia Experiment, many of his suppressed memories returned. Over time, with meetings involving Nicholas, Cameron, and others, his recollection of the Montauk's full scope became clearer. Al Bielek went public in 1989, speaking on the radio and at conferences about Montauk, the Philadelphia Experiment, and related projects. He also raised alarming claims regarding missing children, citing numbers that seemed implausible. Though subsequent research revealed millions of children are reported missing in the U.S. each year, leading to a sobering context to his statements. Despite the accounts of Nichols and Bielek, the official narrative of Camp Hero is much simpler. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers documents decades of cleanup and demolition work at the base. Underground storage tanks were removed, transformers dismantled, and bunkers sealed. Training exercises with diluted chemical agents in 1945 were described as practice kits, not weapons, and investigations in the 1990s and 2000s reported no hazardous waste or hidden arms and by 2019, the corpse declared Camp Hero safe for public use. The radar tower itself was preserved as a historic landmark, a reminder of the Cold War era, while the rest of the base was transformed into a state park. Buildings were boarded up, tunnels were sealed with cement, and restricted areas were fenced off. The paperwork paints a picture of a retired military installation, a park, and nothing more. Yet, the whispers tell a different story. Two men insisting that behind the crumbling bunkers, in sealed rooms, and underground tunnels, extraordinary experiments once took place. As with MK Ultra and Project Paperclip, the precedent exists for government programs that pushed ethical boundaries and operated in extreme secrecy. Montauk sits at the intersection of fact and rumor. Official reports claim one story, while Nicholas and Bielik provide another. The question remains, were the guns of World War II really the last weapons Montauk ever housed, or did Camp Hero become a laboratory for experiments far beyond the battlefield? History proves secrecy and audacity plausible. And somewhere beneath the cliffs of Long Island, the shadows of that audacity may still linger. While Preston Nichols and Al Bielik are the most widely cited first-hand accounts of the Montauk Project, there are other figures who provide additional context to the story, though the more sensational claims will be explored in Part 2. Duncan Cameron was reportedly the prime test subject for many of the psychic amplification experiments. According to Nichols and Bielik, Cameron endured repeated sessions in the Montauk chair and played a central role in early attempts to interface human consciousness with radar systems. His experiences help anchor the timeline and demonstrate how the base's work evolved from radar science into mind-related experiments. Stewart trained under Bielik's supervision. While his accounts are often tied to more speculative elements of the project, at this stage, we note him primarily as a participant in the programs allegedly conducted at Montauk.
That's crazy that they have somebody that has literally claimed to have been one.
Like, oh, so it was Cameron Duncan.
True. Well, yeah.
And wait till we get into that next episode. It's wild.
I'm excited. Now I feel like I want to do like a DNA. What the heck?
Brookhaven National Laboratory personnel and engineers from AIL are also reported to have contributed providing scientific support and oversight. While many of their identities remain confidential, Preston emphasizes their involvement as a bridge between legitimate physics and engineering research and the secretive operations at Montauk. Secondary sources, such as author Peter Moon, compiled interviews and timelines to help document the project. While Moon did not participate directly, his work provides an organized account of the events and personnel involved. For now, we focus on the factual framework, who was involved, what roles they played, how the history of Camp Hero and the Cold War context made such experiments plausible. So now on to MK Ultra. Even as Montauk's stories grew stranger, history gives them a dark backdrop. The U.S. government has already been caught running secret projects that sounded like science fiction. One of the most infamous is MK Ultra, the CIA's mind control program conducted from 1953 to 1964. Under the umbrella of MK Ultra, the agency funded sub-projects experimenting with LSD, hypnosis, psychological torture, and behavior modification, all in the name of controlling the human mind. The program came to light during the Rockefeller Commission and the Church Committee investigation in 1975, after the drug-related death of Dr. Frank Olson. Olson, a civilian Army employee, had been unwittingly dosed with LSD at a meeting of researchers called by the CIA. He died after falling from a hotel window in New York City. a stark example of how government experiments could cross moral boundaries.
That's crazy. Getting dosed with LSD. Mm-hmm. Like,
not even knowing you were dosed.
Right.
Reports from MKUltra reveal the disturbing mindset of the time. In 1963, the Inspector General documented experiments attempting to map the mind using drugs, narcoanalysis, and psychological stress. While initial goals were framed as aiding psychiatry or national security, many of the sub-projects involved testing on unwitting civilians.
That's terrible.
By 1973, most files ordered to be destroyed, leaving only fragments to be pieced together decades later.
It's wild.
It's insane. And that's not the only one. The hearings highlighted the difference between empirical truth and psychological reality. The CIA experimented not just with fact-finding, but with the very nature of consciousness itself, pushing subjects to reveal hidden parts of the mind or to be reshaped entirely. Witnesses testified about isolation, long-term stress, and interrogation as tools for influencing thoughts and behavior. Senators and scientists acknowledged the difficulty of tracking these effects, yet the potential to manipulate a person's mind was clear. So Project Paperclip, this goes, the Cold War made governments paranoid, which also made them dangerously bold and sometimes morally flexible. After World War II, the United States initiated a program to recruit German and Austrian scientists, engineers, and technicians. Initially, the goal was short-term, use their expertise to support the war against Japan. But with Japan's sudden surrender in August of 1945, the mission shifted. What began as a temporary consultation quickly became a long-term effort to secure Third Reich technologies, aircraft, rockets, and missiles, that were considered superior to what the Allies had. Many of these recruits had troubling pasts. Roughly half had Nazi Party affiliations, with a smaller subset deeply immersed in SS or SA operations. In peacetime, these histories might have barred them from working in the United States, but with the Soviet Union emerging as a new threat, the calculus changed. The U.S. government argued that America needed these minds for national defense, and even if not, the Soviets certainly could not be allowed access. A prominent example was Wernher von Buren and his V-2 missile team. While implicated in the forced labor used to build Germany's weapons, von Braun and roughly 125 colleagues were brought to the U.S., quietly housed at Fort Bliss, Texas. They were tasked with building and testing ballistics missiles and soon experimental cruise missiles. By the 1950s, the team moved to Red Stone Arsenal in Alabama, forming the backbone of the U.S. Army's nuclear-capable missile program. Later, these same scientists spearheaded NASA's early rocket programs, including the Saturn V, which carried humans to the moon in 1969. Project Paperclip delivered undeniable technology gains, advanced missile development, cutting-edge spaceflight, and a leg up on the Soviets during the early Cold War. But it came at a moral cost. Many scientists' Nazi affiliations were observed or suppressed. Some individuals might have faced prosecution from war crimes if history had been handled differently. For Montauk, the relevance is clear. Paperclip showed that the U.S. government is willing to import morally compromised expertise to pursue strategic advantage. Science in the service of secrecy, defense, and national ambition. It raises a chilling question. If they could bend morally for rocketry and weapons, what limits, if any, exist when it came to mind control, psychic experiments, or temporal research at Camp Hero? The recruitment of ex-Nazi scientists provides a precedent, a blueprint for how Montauk might have leveraged outside expertise, classified technology, and convert funding to push experiments beyond ordinary and ethical boundaries. It's one thing to imagine it. History proves it plausible. The rumors about Montauk's funding always circle back to the end of World War II. In 1944, an American troop train passed through a French tunnel carrying an unimaginable fortune, $10 billion in Nazi gold. The train was dynamited while still inside, killing 51 U.S. soldiers and burying the treasure with them. What became of the gold remains uncertain, but many believe it resurfaced later in the shadows, fueling covert projects that would never be accounted for in any official budget.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. They were... Stuff I found out about this was, like, nobody survived. Yep. There was no survivor of that, which is what makes it interesting. The money trail grows stranger when you trace it forward. Decades later, Long Island's own Franklin National Bank collapsed in scandal. It had been purchased by Michele Sindona, a notorious Italian financier with deep ties to the mafia, the Vatican, and the infamous P2 Lodge, a Masonic network entangled in global corruption. Some researchers suggest that laundered funds from this web of organized crime may have ended up at Montauk, quietly underwriting experiments too dark to exist on paper. And then there's the ideology connection. Reports surfaced of neo-Nazi activity tied to Montauk, suggesting that the old Aryan obsession hadn't died with Ritchie. Conspiracy lore even whispers of abducted children subject to education and programming that served some hidden agenda, sent according to the wildest accounts into the far future. We're talking 6037 AD.
Hmm.
Always to the same ruined city, always to the same desolate point in time. To believers, this wasn't just a fringe pseudoscience. Long before William Ritchie was imprisoned, his radical theories of orgone energy were already under study by secret government factions. His ideas were compared and fused into the darkest legacy of Nazi science, the mind control techniques of Josef Mengele, the so-called Angel of Death.
I remember learning about him in school.
This was... You learned about him in school?
Yeah, when we learned about Nazis and all of that.
Oh, I guess like when...
Yeah, when you learn about the war. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense. This was about rewriting the limits of human potential. A forbidden marriage of occult Nazi obsession, Cold War secrecy, and the hidden gold that paid for it all. Even after Camp Hero's official closure in the late 1980s, the base refused to disappear from local memory or imagination. Authorities reportedly filled underground tunnels with cement, sealing off passages that insiders claim stretched for miles beneath the park. By 1992, when the site opened as a state park, the buildings were boarded up, the barracks were abandoned, the surface of Montauk finally accessible to visitors. Yet whispers persisted. Locals spoke of human machinery beneath the earth, pets vanishing mysteriously near the base, and an almost palpable electric tension in the air. Visitors describe a heavy, charged feeling, like the atmosphere itself has been altered, as if the land remembered the experiments that had taken place there.
I believe it.
Sounds like the upside down. Preston Nichols' accounts were the most unsettling, with him once describing rooms filled with boys seated in rows, eyes glazed, waiting for instructions. These children, he said, were trained in psychic combat, engaging in invisible wars of will and energy. Some were even sent through experimental time portals, disappearing into the unknown eras or locations. Those who returned often came back altered, fragmented, and emaciated. Their identities partially erased. Estimates of how many children passed through Montauk's underground tunnels varied. Some claimed dozens, Others suggest hundreds. Physical traces of Montauk have been systematically erased. Tunnels remain sealed, doors welded shut, and ventilation shafts appear to descend far deeper than a mere radar installation would require. Yet, for those who sense it, the base still hums with memory and hidden past of psychic experiments, portals, and terrifying possibilities that something in Montauk was not merely observing humanity, but attempting to control time itself. So in the next episode, we're going to go into all that other stuff.
I am so sat and I'm going to be sat and seated on this couch until literally next week, because now I'm like, I'm in it.
Yeah.
And now I want to go back and rewatch Stranger Things and be like, how much of this is actually, like, that's crazy.
At one point, I believe the name was, for Stranger Things, was going to be Montauk.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild. Netflix was probably like, we actually don't want to get in trouble.
Stranger Things was originally going to be called Montauk.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see when we get into some of these now? Somebody, I watched a documentary on this, and I don't remember which one of these guys went back there. But there's video, like, they go into some of the, like, buildings, and there's just paperwork still strewn all over.
Really?
And
it's still there, like, today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to today. You can go, like you said, there's some places that are fenced off, and people say, like, they've gone past the fence. You know, your urban explorers. They get met with, like, men in black suits and, like, heavy-duty machine guns. And they tell them they have to turn around.
Yeah, I can see the, definitely looks like it's that type of a, well, also the graffiti and everything. They always make it look 10,000 times more scarier now because it's been abandoned forever and ever. But, yeah, the vibe is definitely there.
It's definitely weird. Definitely there. Just wait till we get into it. I'm trying to think anything else with that, like, documentary.
It's crazy because you even look up the Montauk Project and, like, a bunch of pictures of Eleven from Stranger Things comes out.
Well, that's also what's weird is when I was trying to do my own research on it, I was struggling to find a ton of information. Like, besides, like, the basic stuff,
I was
having a hard time going, like, real deep.
I wonder why. Mm-hmm.
So, stay tuned.
Yeah, I'm excited. Because
we're going to get into all of that now. Like, we'll get more into the conspiracy side of things and the stuff that's going on or has happened. So it's weird. We've never ended a part two.
I know. It feels like incomplete. It feels weird.
Yeah.
I'm turning in a project that's not done.
Yeah. Well, if you guys liked this episode so far, don't forget we said earlier, give us 5 stars, comment. Don't forget to follow us on any of our socials. Well, I gotta thank Sam for all of her hard work. This is definitely
This is a hard one to research.
And she's killed it.
Absolutely.
So, thank you, Sam. Yeah. Go check her blog out at scaremesam.com or her podcast, Scare Me Sam. So, thank you guys for joining us this week as we learned all about the beginning pieces of the Montauk Project. And I guess I was going to say, yeah, thanks for joining us for the start of the Montauk Project. And as always, stay weird and stay haunted. We will catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.